All right, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to Shieldcocks Happens, sponsored by Prospect Bomb and the Dustin Shieldcocks Foundation. A lot of good stories, a lot of good news, so stay tuned, plug in, and enjoy. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are introducing our Dustin Shieldcocks Foundation podcast. This is our first one, so we're really excited about the direction where this could go. We're excited about the stories we'll get out of this, and we're excited to kind of get to know a little bit more about not only Dustin, but what the foundation does, along with the individuals that we'll have on the show. We're excited to get a lot of different perspectives, different stories, not just about rising like a phoenix, so to speak, and coming out of the ashes, but just real life in general and how people are responding. We see a lot of stuff on news. We see a lot of stuff in general on social media, things like that, that can tend to be negative. But what Dustin has portrayed and what Dustin has talked about over his journey over the last several years, months, things like that, are very positive spins that we think are a lot of fun not only to talk about, but a lot of fun to kind of go into. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, Dustin Shieldcocks.
All right. Thanks, Jameson. And so as we start the podcast, it's going to be me and Jameson Brown here also, who will be helping me, who's got an amazing story himself that we'll obviously get into today and a little bit more through different podcasts. And the goal here is, like you said, we've talked a lot about my story, of being paralyzed, what I've had to go through, the adversity of myself and my family. And the fact of the matter is, what I want to get into is everybody has a paralysis. Like, everybody has their own adversity. And so we want to hear people's stories. We want to hear failures, success. We want to hear how people are going through challenges and what they do to deal with them. And so as myself and Jameson being my co-host, it'll be great to have different guests on here with different backgrounds, and we can kind of see what kind of outcome, what kind of stories we get. And so breaking into it, we know that I've been paralyzed, how I've been part of a research program. I was one of four guys in the world to go through it with a spinal cord stimulator, which has improved my life immensely. And now we're still trying to make that a program to improve everybody. But so I've been through a crazy journey. I mean, I've got some amazing stories myself, and we've seen a lot on Facebook and YouTube. But Jameson, I mean, we can start off by kicking it off and tell us a little bit about yourself. Like, introduce yourself here, like what your background is.
First thing I want to know is you being paralyzed and all that stuff, but there's a big definition behind paralysis. And I guess before I go into mine, what does paralysis mean to you? Is that, for me, for instance, I think it's paralyzing your progression through life. There's a lot of people that have certain things that hold them back from true potential and things like that. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, so like a paralysis for me, obviously, paralysis is I can't walk. Right. But there's also other issues. I'm not just saying you can't walk. Like, I've had effect with my bowel, my bladder, my sexual function, the ability to sweat, my life in a wheelchair.
Hold on, you can't sweat?
Well, I mean...
how's that a bad thing? That's what I want to know.
Wait, in the summertime when you're trying to hang out with your friends, you need to sweat, whatever it is.
Okay.
All right, yeah. No, so yeah. Yeah, so I can't sweat, man. I had to drink Red Bull to stay hydrated.
Right.
And my paralysis, though, is the fact that I'm paralyzed. And when I was saying, like, I'm trying to relate it to people as a paralysis could be, a death in your family, or it could be, finance problems. It could be a drug addiction. It could be, it could be anything. Really, it's basically when you have a paralysis, it's like you're faced with some kind of adversity.
Right.
And the focus of the foundation is here is like when you're slapped in the face with adversity, what are you going to do now? And then that's where the stories will come in. Like, I want to hear what happened to you when you've had your troubles. Like, and we've talked, like I said, about me, what I've had to do. And sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. I mean, it doesn't always come out positive, but you have to deal with the outcome. It's like, it's what do you do with the next step?
Well, I think one of the things that strikes me with your message in regards to what you just talked about, I mean, you're talking about these roadblocks, these things that hold us back from really achieving a true happiness. Mine was alcohol addiction. Mine was, almost, I guess you could say, I want to numb the pain away. I never wanted to face consequence. You know, some people have different types of, and you went right into it. You know, paralysis could be a death in the family, paralysis could be financial issues, things like that. My paralysis was literally dealing with the issue. But what happened was is that my issue became a massive building block for multiple issues that just stacked on top of each other. As an alcoholic, you find yourself avoiding real life. You want to get away from it. And I lived and worked, and my life was rotated around a very aggressive industry. And instead of taking the goods with the bads, I would minimize the good and I would take all the bad. And what I found was that hidden deep down below all the numbing of the pain away, the drinking, all that stuff, that I had anxiety issues and I had depression issues. But I never wanted to actually face those. And so I just drank them away. You know, that's all I did. It's tough to talk about it because certain people can talk about it and be totally normal about it because it's like, yeah, these problems are big for me. But it's like, then you talk to other people and it's really not. But then at the end of the day, they may not be suffering from that. They might be suffering from something different that you look at as max, but they're looking at theirs as minimum and you as max. And so, you know, that's what gets me excited about talking about this with you and talking about this to other people is the fact that regardless of how maximum my problem is or how minimum my problem is, it's still a problem. People still run with this.
Right.
You have a lot of people who have been paralyzed, who are dealing with that, and they may look at that as I've adjusted to life and life is great. And you have a lot of alcoholics who are dealing with alcoholism, or you have a lot of drug addicts who are dealing with these addictions. And some of them may be looking at that saying, well, my issue is minimized because I'm okay. I don't drink anymore. But there's still a problem nonetheless. There's still a paralysis that you talked about. There's still this people need to hear other people go through these things and come out, so to speak, like a phoenix, like that, like coming out of the ashes. But,
yeah,
you know, I was in an industry. I wouldn't say it was the industry. It was I think it was the competitive nature of what I was and competitive nature of what I was brought up, you know, from a family of success. I wanted to be really good. But the problem is when failure hit, I took it really personal. And so the anxiety got worse. Depression got worse. And next thing you know, I revert to alcohol. And I got, you know, I went through a divorce. And I think a lot of people can kind of relate with that. You go through breakups, you go through divorce. And that was difficult. But the funny thing is my alcohol wasn't bad when I was married. It was right after. You know, so now I have...
From the marriage?
Yeah. You know, I didn't drink a lot in the marriage, although my marriage was just rotten.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you get excited at the age of 21, 22, and you get married, right? Yeah, that changes 5 years later. Because you find out that this person is not the person you thought they were going to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had 2 great kids, and I thought by walking away from a scenario that was obviously toxic that I would improve my life. But what ended up happening is I never actually dealt with the issues, because right after I got divorced, I started going out partying and having a good time, and the issues just continued to compile. I mean, they just stacked on top of each other. And so the drinking got crazier, and I started running into new people who weren't as good for my life. And I continued to drink more, and it continued to get to a point where I was drinking around my kids. And that was like a no-no from, like, this was something I made a ground rule for back from when even my ex-wife and I were dating, was that we'd never drink around kids. And I got drink around kids, and I remember that there were multiple people that talked to me about calming it down. And when we talk about almost these road bumps, you don't see them for yourself a lot of time. It's kind of like driving down the road, right? And you hit a pothole and you never saw it.
Yeah.
But I swear everyone else behind you saw it. And your tire goes flat and you're thinking, why didn't I fix that problem before? Why didn't I move? Well, it's because you don't see it. You know, it's shit happens.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's just kind of the way we look at it. And that is kind of the way I looked at it from my standpoint, was I could never see the problem because the initial problem, I'd never faced it. And that was getting over depression, getting over my anxiety, and just knowing that life is going to give you some ups and downs. You just deal with it. But I never dealt with it. And so I didn't see the pothole. I didn't see the massive drop-off, and I didn't see my alcohol problem becoming an issue. I got to a point where I was showing up to the dealership shaking.
From the alcohol.
You know, I would go home after work and I'd drink myself to sleep. I'd buy an 18-pack of beer and I'd just drink myself to sleep because I couldn't shut off. And the excuse was that I always had when people were like, dude, you need to calm it down a little bit, man. Like, I mean, I had my dad talk to me. I had, you know, countless relationships broken up over the fact that I was drinking too much. And it always came back to my one excuse being, it's not bad. It's not that bad. It'll never get that bad. And when I broke that cardinal rule, it was that bad. And I still didn't recognize it. You know, it's kind of like, we always look at some of these indicators as to what's holding us back. And that was it. It was just, I never wanted to face the reality that I was in a bad spot.
Yeah.
And, you know, after that, I kind of just came unhinged, you know? And
yeah, so as you're going through this, like, you know, you said people are telling you, you know, that you're having these problems and you're just the only person who's not seeing it.
Yeah.
When did it start to, like, when did you actually take action, I guess? When did things change for you to start?
When I hit a brick wall. And it's funny because everyone always says when I hit that wall, when I hit rock bottom, you know, you finally realize, like, everyone's taken away. No, I actually hit a wall going 95 miles an hour in a Range Rover, head on, no seatbelt. And that was on my 29th birthday. It was like right after my 29th birthday, about 6 months after that. I hit a wall going 95 miles an hour in a dealership car. And I woke up in the hospital bed. And I thought for sure, because I'd woke up and I remember being in a hospital bed. I remember looking over, my mom's crying. And I looked down and I'm thinking, all right, what happened? You know, why am I here? What happened? Everyone's telling me the story. And it dawned on me that, my God, this is where I've got to. And I knew the repercussions of wrecking the dealership car, but I was wrecking the dealership car under the influence. And not just under the influence, I blew a massive number.
Yeah, hold up, let me stop you right there. So before you get, so you got into the car accident at 96 miles per hour?
95.
95, hit a brick wall, and you woke up in a hospital bed, no seatbelt, and did...
Nothing.
You walked away from the accident?
Yeah.
You see, I mean, that's... Not that I'm picking on your injury.
No, I know.
I mean, what happened to me... So I wrecked at 75 miles per hour, and I was working, you know, giving back to society, and here you are drinking, you know, causing danger, and you wreck at 95, and you walk away, and I'm the one who's in a wheelchair?
Yep.
That's something I don't understand.
Yeah, and I think that's what, it was that moment where you start looking at going, okay, there are people who have died, there are people who have lost way more than I'm going to lose, and at that point, it wasn't about the monetary. The night before that accident, I had taken my kids, dropped them off to their mom drunk, and they smelled it. And it started as I'm laying there, right? And they put me in the back of the cop car. I'm thinking to myself, I should have lost more. You know what I mean? Like I should have lost more. I should have lost not just the monetary aspect. I should have lost my kids. I should have lost my life. I should have lost a lot in that scenario. And I started looking at going, that's when it is. I'm done. I can't look at people in the face after an accident like that, after a scenario like this, and say that my life is good. Because it's not. It's not at that point. It is literally one of those scenarios where, and I remember I went to a therapist. This is after I went back and saw the car. So we went after I got bailed out, and it was over a weekend. And I went in that Monday to go look at the car, grab some of my stuff out of the back of the car. And the car was smashed. I mean, you're talking just smashed. And I'm sitting there going, how the hell? And I went to the therapist that next Tuesday and told him, I'm checking myself in. He goes, good, because I was going to do it for you. And I'm like, no, I need to do this for myself. Because if I don't make that decision to change, then how do I expect anybody else to change around me? How do I expect anything else to change around me? How do I expect me to feel like I'm not that asshole that avoid a problem so someone else could get it? Does that make sense?
Like, yeah.
I don't know how much you believe in karma, but I look at it from the standpoint that night, could my good karma points cost somebody a life? Could it have cost somebody something else more dear? What did I do? And so instead of beating myself up with the guilt that nothing bad truly happened, I decided to change it. And I remember I told him, I said, this is going to be the first and last time I ever check into rehab. And he says, I hear that a lot, but it never happens. So I went into rehab about 2-3 days after the accident. And I checked myself in for 30 days. And I don't know if anyone or if you know the success rate out of people going and coming out of rehab. It's not high.
No,
it's like,
I'm not.
It's like a 10-15% chance that you go in, you're going to actually live a normal, decent life without substance. And so I checked in. In fact, people from the dealership would call and you know, I talked to my family quite a bit, but it was up until about, it was my seventh day in. It didn't really hit me. Like, I knew that I'd made decisions that had caused a problem, but I was still entitled. I was still not facing the problem. I knew that I had a problem, but I was reflecting the problem back to my childhood upbringing. I was reflecting it back to my parents. I was deflecting all this stuff, and I never was taking the ownership that this is an internal issue. And this goes for a lot of people who suffer from addiction. You know, the reason we take is because we don't ever want to reflect back to ourselves. We want to deflect the problem on somebody else. We want someone else to deal with the problem. And 7 days in, my kids came in. It was the first family day we could have, right? So my kids come in. And my daughter was three at this time. And she looks at me and she goes, why are you here? What is this place? And I'm you know, trying to explain it to her the best I can to a three-year-old. And my son goes, I know what this place is. You're sick, aren't you? I said, yeah, I'm sick. And he goes, okay. Well, Mom kind of told us a little bit, but what are you sick with? I'm like, I'm sick with problems. And my daughter says, well, are you going to come back out? And they're giving these looks, and you realize at that point in time, it's not everyone else's fault. It's yours. And you start looking at going, it's not, the guilt, everything hit right there.
I think you're starting to realize that, you know, your problem that you're having affects more people than just yourself. I mean,
exactly.
And that's everything. I mean,
exactly. And so that was the turning point in regards to, all right, this is no longer everyone else's deal. This is my problem. This is not my parents. This is not my friends. This is not the occupation I worked in. This is not everything else. This is me. This is an internal problem. So I got to figure out the problem. And so I came out of rehab and, you know, had a couple bumps, you know, where it was like, I realized I have a beer can in my hand and you put it down. And I got to a point where I said, I got to beat this. I got to take this out. And this was then the first week that I got out of rehab. Because you get out of rehab and it's a pink cloud, man. You're in real life again. It's like,
yeah.
You know, you're in rehab and it's almost like you're in this force bubble, like nothing will happen to you. Everything's going to be fine. And you get out and it's like you're now back in real life. And you have to adjust. And I remember for the first 3 months, I would walk into a convenience store and I would just stare at the beer aisle, you know, at the gas station, the cold beer fridge, whatever
yeah.
it is. And I'd stare. And the reason I would stare is because I had to get myself to overcome the urge to buy it. And so I just stare at it. And 4 months in, I finally went out with a group of my friends. But I realized I couldn't go out with a group of my friends until I had built barriers to basically keep myself from making the mistakes. Because once I took a sip, then I could blame everything else. You know, once I took a drink, I could blame everyone else. I could blame the person that bought me the drink. I could blame the guys who allowed me to drink. I could blame everybody who allowed me to get into a car, and I could blame everyone that allowed me to get in the car accident.
Did you have to change the people that you actually hung out with?
Yep.
I mean, did you?
I had to change quite a bit. And I couldn't hang out with certain people because I couldn't be in those environments. And and it was life in general. I started looking at not from a narrow perspective. It was looking at from an overall, like, okay, so what else can I now give back to society? And I started looking at it from the standpoint of I can become a better father to my kids who then can become better adults when they're raised because they can look at it and say, you know, dad did this, dad lost this, dad still came out of it fine. Dad learned that he had to take on his problems. I started talking and I started helping other addicts, because my take again was, did my karma points that night take something away from someone else? And so I wanted to try, not necessarily earn it back, but I wanted to become somebody who could help others. I wanted to just talk. I never got scared of talking about my story. You know, here's a kid that went from making, you know, $100,000 with the opportunity to make millions and own a dealership and all this stuff, right? Like, I was a golden spoon boy and I lost it all.
Yeah.
All of it gone. And I didn't care. To some people, for a long time, that was a failure. But to me, it wasn't, because the true failure was the guy that entered rehab, you know, 6 months to a year before that. And that was me. And so for me, it wasn't that everything I lost was a sign of a failure. It was everything I lost was a sign of my mistakes. And not a failure because I lost a job or failure because I lost an opportunity, but failure because I didn't pay attention to my problems in the first place. And I remember that, you know, it was my year-long anniversary. And I had talked to a lot of people about this. And I finally got to a point where I wasn't scared of it. And I wasn't scared of going to sleep. And I'll tell you, man, it was hard. The anxiety and the voices in your head, man, they beat you up hard. And I remember laying there, and I couldn't sleep some nights till 3 o'clock in the morning because I couldn't drown out the pain. And so I just had to deal with it. I had to learn what my head was doing, what my body was doing. And it got to a point where I just said, you know what? I'm not afraid of this. You know, there's going to be those really shitty days, but there's also going to be the really good ones. And you pay attention to the really good ones. And yeah, other times where I'll go to my friend's house and I become the DD, I do. I'm the DD every freaking night. And I don't care.
Here's a question about it. Like, because I think about myself when you're saying that, what kind of made you change those points? I mean, like, you have those nights where it's hard. Like, what kept you driving to face your adversity? I mean, what kept you going? I mean,
my kids.
Was it? Because I had difficult. I had a difficult with, like, you know, trying to think.
I bet.
Well, why not give up, I guess? I mean, it's.
Yeah, I think it was never necessarily about proving people wrong. I think in some people will go out and they'll, like, I'm going to do this because I'm going to prove everyone wrong.
Yeah.
Or it was because I'd set up goals. I was going to tell myself that it's a big mistake that I'm not going to allow to take me back. It was a setback that, yeah, quite frankly, people go back into rehab and they'll go back in. In fact, I was talking to another friend of mine from the rehab. We had learned that three other guys that we knew from our rehab actually went back in again and again. And they had this problem over and over and over. And where you separate yourself from some people, a lot of people, is that you made the decision to get out of bed and go change and go do things and go figure out, how am I going to live my life now?
Yeah. Well, it's crazy because it's such a, that might be one of the most difficult choices or a decision someone has to make, because I was thinking about myself a little bit when you said that, because, you know, when I was paralyzed, your life changes so much, and your life was changed. And so, but for me personally, it's crazy. Like, of course, my family, you know, but I don't have kids. I didn't have a wife or anything. Like, my life, I was living my life just to be alive, I guess. Like, I didn't have the drive to keep going. And what it was for me is when I got accepted into that research program.
That's cool. So that was cool.
Yeah, to be a spinal cord research participant, to, you know, have this elite chance, and I did it. And then which really gave me the drive was, you know, when I got that opportunity, I knew what it was like being, you know, in rehab and, like, having no hope and having no, like, a reason to get out of bed, I guess. Yeah, right. But I know people who are in wheelchairs are wondering how the stimulator is working, how it's improved my life. And I'm thinking, you know, and that's what gave me so much drive, is like, I want to do the best possible, you know, for myself, but for everyone else too. I want to put in the effort to improve these guys, to let them know that, you know, things can change. You can improve your life. You can get, you know, yourself back to where you were, but it's going to take a lot of work and
yeah,
the ups and downs and, like, I what agree. You were saying. And that's kind of where I get my drive from, is helping other people, which is basically kind of what this whole podcast is about. I mean, it's, not focusing on my story anymore, but like just listening to yours right there,
it correlates because everyone has these drawbacks. I mean, you know, yours was going out and changing lives and changing perspectives and changing ways that people looked at themselves so they could get themselves out of bed and they could go through and give themselves internal drive to move on. Mine was changing perspective that there is a chance that you could literally screw up your whole life. And if you still have a chance, you can take the chance and change people's perspectives. It doesn't change overnight, man. You know this. You didn't go from like, you know, you didn't go from waking up one day and saying, I'm going to start a foundation or I'm going to start this. You didn't do that.
You wake up one day and some days you wake up and wondering why you're still on this, you know, why you lived through this accident. Yeah. I mean, there's days I still have them. I still have my ups and downs and you know, and they're going to continue to happen. And but like you said, everyone's going to have them. You're probably going to be faced with a challenge every day. And it doesn't have to necessarily be, you know, alcohol. It could be anything else too.
It could. And you see it a lot. I mean, you see so much of it. And I think that's the interesting aspect is that beyond wanting to change perspective, I wanted to be able to give a second opinion, like a raw opinion on life in general. You know, because that's what something like this does to you. It does to anybody who has had a setback is you have a different opinion. It's not roses. It's not unicorns. It's not rainbows. It's not happiness all the time. Like, there's some serious shit that happens.
Yeah. Well,
And I guess we could call it Shilcox happens. I mean, that's what it is.
And that's the way to focus it on this podcast. Yeah. You know, like you said, shit happens to everybody. And we'll just say Shilcox happens. And that's just going to be the main focus. I mean, because it's just crazy. And I think it's going to be great having you as a co-host with me on this. And we can bring in different guests. I mean, because there's stories out there. I've talked to quite a few people and it almost just blows my mind to hear what they have to say. I mean, that's something I like to focus on again, too, is like, see with myself, like we're talking about how everyone can have a paralysis. Well, you're sitting here with me and you're looking at me. I'm in a wheelchair. So immediately you're saying, well, he's paralyzed. But, you know, after hearing a little bit about your story, it's like, well, you know, damn, like yours is difficult as well. It's like, well, not poor me. It's like,
I think a lot of people forget that there are four ways that you can judge a person. Not really judge a person, but know a person. It's physical. It's emotional. It's, spiritual. And then it's in some cases, it could also be environmental. You know, there might be things that they can't handle in certain environments that drive them crazy. And that's mental. You know, there's a lot of things that people deal with that we take. I mean, because I could talk to somebody from an emotional standpoint, a mental standpoint, but I'll never be able to actually, you know, say that my problem can correlate with someone physical or someone who has gone through a serious mental issue, something like that. You know what I mean? Like it's hard, but the more and more you talk to people and the more we start to realize, like the more and more you and I have talked, the more and more it's like, realistically, the damage in your scenario is physical and it's hard to deal with. But you've adjusted and your life is taken off. And everyone has some type of life paralysis that's different from ours that they're afraid to talk about because they're afraid that if I say my problem, it might offend somebody else who has a different problem. But I think the more and more people are comfortable to talk about their problems, whether it's physical, emotional, mental, spiritual, whatever it is, I think the more and more people can start to progress and move forward because now they start looking at it from a standpoint of, well, there's no excuse. You've eliminated the excuses.
Yeah, really. I mean, it's like, and I think that's a important way to focus on it too, because like you said, whatever it is that your struggle is, your problem, I mean, there's no excuse not to deal with it. And I mean, and it's there, like you said, we're not comparing our adversity here.
There's all kinds of statements, but it's not like who can piss up the flagpole the highest.
I mean, yeah,
it's like,
right?
I mean, there's none of this. It's more of just a common understanding that people have setbacks. We just want to try and help people get past those. But, that's kind of my story in a nutshell.
And it's great, like I said, and I think it's going to be awesome to have as we do other guests in here with the show, I mean, having my story and your story and just for us to talk back and forth. But that's the goal now, is we want to have the opportunity to bring people on here and just whether it tells, you know, it could be a successful story, you know, adversity, even if they're still going through it as of right now, like, you know, tell us the struggle they're going through right now or something they faced. And in order to do that, you know, if you get on Dustin Shilcox Foundation on Facebook and send a message in, if you want to be on a podcast with us or, you know, someone who'd be a great candidate for it, I mean, just shoot us a little message and we definitely look at it. That's perfect. If someone wants to come in here and tell us what they're going through and, you know, if we, it gets too personal, they obviously can just say, I don't want to answer that. But otherwise, we want to make it open range.
Call us out on it.
Yeah, call us out because we'll talk about anything. I just think it's so important to have this because what we need to talk about is, you know, what's beyond the wheelchair.
Yeah.
You know, and like you said, and it's the first person is yourself to get out and actually talk about it and learn from it. So,
Well, folks, we'd love to have all of you stay tuned and continue to listen to us. Like we said, you know, we're excited to have different individuals on the show that are going to give us their story and kind of give us their life feedback and where they are now and where they were then and all that stuff. And we'd love to have, you know, over time, have your questions, your comments, whatever it is, and be able to just kind of feel free to have this be somewhat of an open forum because we're not afraid to talk about it. I know Dustin's not afraid to talk about it. And we'll have some very energetic, lively bunches of people coming in here and out. And we're excited. So continue to stay tuned for the next several podcasts that'll come through. And hopefully we can introduce you to part of our family and have some fun with this. So.
Yeah, and then like I said, and so basically we'll, if someone's interested in being on the podcast or you know someone who would be a good candidate, you can message the Dustin Shilcox Foundation on Facebook. And I guess at the end of the day, this is going to be that shit happens to everybody, but we're just going to say Shilcox happens and come tell us your story and let's talk about it.
So stay tuned and tune in when we launch our next one.
All right, perfect.
All right, thank you.
All right, everyone, thank you again for listening to our podcast. If you would like to be on our podcast and have a story that you want to get out there, visit us at www.dustinshilcox.com or private message us on Facebook, and we'd love to have you on the show.